Hi there, hope you are doing fantastic. Daniel here, of course, and this is going to be a reply to four people: Julie, Amy, Jay, and Joe. And I'm going to start with one that is super overdue. What happened was I connected with Julie a couple months ago, and then I didn't see this message. I actually came in July 1st. And you know what? I started recording this podcast just a few minutes ago. And then as I was reading, I was like, there seems to be a little bit of a success story here. So I'm actually going to go back to when I started talking to Julie and we'll go from there. So April 3rd, this came in. Hi, Daniel. I've been intently listening to your pods down here in Australia since I discovered them. They've been very helpful on many levels. I'm 3 years into a torturous insomnia battle that has greatly affected my quality of life. I'm trying your advice and recently read Say Goodnight to Insomnia. I'm hard not to crack, but will continue to battle on. Keep up the fantastic work. And I said, thank you for that. And I believe I pretty early on, I told her, you know, when I read Hard Nut, it made me think of Sasha Stevens. You may have heard me talk about her books. And I said that those are really good. And then she said she had not read them yet, but she said the following: when you talk about the way the body kicks into hyperarousal, next day, for example, when sleep deprived is right on, with it comes the adrenaline and cortisol. Are those the main causes? Or those are the main causes, I think, that creates this hyperarousal state. So for me, I must have been getting enough sleep to keep me alive, but feeling like I have hardly slept for 12 months. And it's ended with me unable to yawn, unable to feel sleepy, constant exhaustion and fatigue, but mixed with this hyper state of mind. Finally created an implosion, and it was sliding. I pleaded with my doc to help me, but he couldn't come up with any answers. I had first a very terrifying panic attack that lasted hours. My nervous system was done. Looking back, I was suffering serious anxiety, and the thought of bedtime approaching and entering the torture chamber was my bedroom. I wish I'd found you way before that happened, so the anxiety meds helped with anxiety attacks, no more attacks, but did not assist me with initiating sleep, which is my problem. So many, many prescriptions for different meds, nothing worked. So it's CBT, I for me, and she talks about how she's been decreasing her medications, completed a race, and let's move on here. And she said, I also tried 12 months of psychologist and psychiatry visit after 6 months, still no proper sleep, and so on. And I just said, this is quite a journey, and it talked a little bit about hyperarousal, and then let's actually move forward to the most recent email message I say that came in July 1st. And on the background of what we just read, listen to this. Hi, Daniel, I'm doing really well. Thanks to the great info and advice from your podcast and also Sasha Stevens' books. However, as soon as I go away anywhere at all, basically just a different bed, I cannot go to sleep. I guess I get hyper-aroused with any change, and it's enough to do the damage and prevent me from relaxing, in which case sleep can't come. Any advice be great. I'm able to basically function normally most of the time, yay, and enjoy life because I'm sleeping, smiley, until I go anywhere at all. Then, of course, without sleep, everything is pretty crap and tough just to get through the days. Thanks. There's actually another message from Julie, more recent, but let's focus on this one because I think that the question is the same. What do you do if you come to a place where you actually sleep good at home, but as soon as you're going to go away, that insomnia kicks back in? Well, first thing to do, and I think Sasha Stevens would definitely agree with me on this one, is focus on that positive, which I know you're already doing, Julie, but for everybody else that's tuning in here, focusing on the fact that you're actually sleeping well at home, that is a huge step forward. And that's good on so many levels, but one of them is that home is where you're supposed to, you know, feel safe, feel good, and sleep well, and you are doing that. That's really, really, really good. Now, why is it that you're not sleeping well when you're away from home? Well, I think you know this. But just again, to clarify for everybody, it's not that the bed is different. It's not that the air is different. It's not, I'm sure often when you travel, there's no particular stress. So it's not like you always stress when you go anywhere. It's more the kind of built up preoccupation, meaning like you, when you travel somewhere, you start thinking, what if, you know, something is new? What if I don't sleep well in this hotel room? Will I sleep? Maybe I won't sleep at all. If I don't sleep at all, then how am I going to do tomorrow? And like preoccupation sets in, you're worried about sleep, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you don't sleep well. So how can you avoid that? Well, first of all, unless maybe this was completely clear to you, Julie, but if it wasn't, then just, you know, just think about this, that it is the possibility that you're not going to sleep well outside of your home becomes kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. It's that preoccupation that is the root cause. And now, if that was kind of new to you, then that's really good. Just knowing that is helpful in itself. Well, let's say you kind of when I said this, you were like, I kind of know that. That's kind of what I figured it was. So what can I do about it? Well, again, you cannot. I mean, I'm sure you learned this now. One cannot force oneself to sleep. The harder you try, the less sleep you get. So you cannot like make yourself sleep. So I think when somebody's traveling, the same thing applies that when you're home. Meaning, if you're feeling kind of, you know, alert, hyper aroused, you know, you feel that kind of energy inside you, then you know you're probably not going to sleep. You should not go to bed. You should not try to sleep. And you know, you should as much as possible stick to your normal get up time in the morning. But here's what I think is really important. Let's say you're traveling somewhere and that happened, like you slept really poorly. Well, then how did you do the following day? Well, you probably felt tired. You had a hard time focusing. You didn't do as well as well. But you know what? You got through that day. You know, you managed, despite being away from home, sleeping poorly outside of home, you were able to pull through. And if you think about that, then you may start fearing it less. Like if you're like, you know what, I slept poorly outside of my home before, and guess what, I was able to get through it. And if that happens again, guess what, I'm going to get through it again. I think that's a big one. And basically, the more you apply that and the more you travel, then I think it will come. So basically, just going back to kind of like generally how to get past insomnia, it's very much about like just moving forward, not reflecting upon the poor, like focusing on the good. And I think when you've got to a point where you're doing well at home, it's not a huge leap to like get to a point where you also sleep well outside of the home. And I think it may be a little trickier if somebody is traveling very rarely, you know, like maybe once a year, twice a year. But it sounds like you travel quite a bit, and in a way, I think that's a positive. I think the more you travel, the more kind of like opportunity you have to get to a point where you no longer worry about sleeping poorly outside of the outside of your home. And when you get to a point where you don't worry so much about that, good sleep will come even inside. And by the way, once you have that one night outside of your home, you sleep like pretty decent, then that's going to build sleep confidence outside of your home environment. So I hope this was helpful, Julie. And by the way, before we leave Julie, I know she sent me an email as well. Let's make sure there are no further questions. So here, this was just 2 days ago. And she, there was nothing new, no, she just said that she was looking forward to listening to this, and that's it, actually. That was also Julie, sorry for this very, very delayed reply, but hope it was helpful again. And with that said, let's move on to a message from Jay here. So Jay, I've made like a few recent episodes, and for those of you not familiar with those, Jay has been really concerned that he had this very, very rare condition called sporadic familial insomnia, which I'm always conflicted about. Like on one end, I feel like it's not an insomnia. It's like a neurological condition. If somebody has trouble sleeping, is worried about their sleep, that to me signals that it's not that, because people with neurological conditions, it's kind of like very obvious for an outside outside observer that they have some kind of, you know, tremors or like, you know, ataxia, like they can't walk, they can't walk, but on the flip side of that, there's so much misinformation about it. So I feel like if you don't talk about it at all, that's not helpful either. And before I forget, now, I wish I could just pull this up quickly. In fact, I'm going to try to do that as I'm talking here. I had like one of the like not so long ago success stories was from somebody named Elkrist. And if I remember correctly, she had she messaged me through Instagram. So as we're speaking here, I'm going to try to pull up that conversation we had. Here it is. Perfect. And I'm going to, I read most of this conversation in the previous podcast, but I left this out because, again, because of what I just said, talked about, like the SFI thing. But what happened was that Elkrist was actually messaging me because she was worried that she had sporadic fatal insomnia. I'm going to read a little bit from that. And she said here, hi, Daniel, I watched your videos. I've suffered insomnia for 3 years. And just yesterday, I haven't slept for 2 days. Doesn't come for me. I know it's extremely rare, but I'm worried I might be having the first signs 2 days with no sleep, and I still don't feel tired. So Elkrist, and by the way, if you search this channel or like kind of just Google Elkrist, Elkrist Insomnia Insight, you can read the entire story and see that she started off being worried that she had sporadic fatal insomnia. And went on to actually sleep great. Like the last time I heard from her, she slept great. So that's the first thing I wanted to tell you about Jay. And now going back to Jay's message here. Hi Dan, I've been wondering, let's say I don't have SFI. I wonder how intense insomnia can get. And I said, I will make a reply. And Jay said, thanks, I'm still not doing good. Only got an hour of sleep last night. I'm starting to look like crap, but can't wait to see the video. Have a nice day. So, Jay, first of all, when I saw this message, where it said, I've been wondering how intense can insomnia is if it's not SFI. That was super encouraging to me. Like the mere fact that you're considering the possibility that it's not SFI. That to me felt like, okay, I think, and again, nothing is medical advice here, but I believe that when I read that, I felt like, okay, I think Jay may be taking kind of the first steps towards overcoming insomnia. By the way, I've tried to stop saying that because it implies that there's kind of a battle and conflict, which I want to move away from. So I should say maybe first step towards getting past insomnia. And how intense can insomnia get? It can get extremely intense. I mean, if you browse this channel, you will see like people describing things that are just like just makes you like just feel awful. And you know, Ellen, for example, that comes to mind. Like the first emails from her was like super long and like super intense, where she was like, "I've gone 48 hours without a wink of sleep." I go several weeks with like sleeping 2 hours or whatnot. And then a more recent episode, actually that was episode pod 33. Anybody out there, episode pod 33 is like loaded with good information and tips from Ellen, where she describes how she's doing much, much better. No other name comes to mind right now. Or maybe Kim. There was somebody named Kim that was way back, like maybe around 100, episode 100, something like that. But Kim also like hadn't slept for 3 days straight when she emailed me. And then I haven't heard from her in a while, but the last time I heard from her, she just said she was doing better, far from perfect, but she was doing better. So I'm just pointing out that insomnia, what I call, you know, when I say insomnia, I just mean, you know, trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. Generally, that's insomnia. But most people have what's called psychophysiologic insomnia, where, you know, it's kind of triggered by a worry about sleep and efforts to try to sleep better. And psychophysiologic insomnia can get super, super intense. So, Jay, hope this was helpful to you. And now, let's move on to Amy. And there are two emails from Amy, and let's start with the first one. So this came in 2 days ago, and it's titled, it's an email titled Sleep, My Story and Advice, Welcome. So let's go on here. Hi, Daniel. I have just discovered your podcast. Absolutely loving it. Thank you. I'm just going to interject there and say thank you. It's like getting emails like this. It's super, super helpful because other people have exactly the same questions. And it's so helpful to hear this. Which, by the way, I'm going to sneak another one in there. And somebody named Bruce made a comment on one of my Facebook posts. And he's I think what was happening was like I shared my initial experience like coaching on this app that I'm coaching on now. By the way, anybody's interested, it's called Bedtime with a Y, and it's available for app, you know, Apple products. But now we're working on a couple of bugs, but I think it's going to be super helpful. I think it already is, and it's going to be much better as we go along here. But what I said was that my initial coaching experience was that most people seem to kind of like just move along in a self-directed way, and I hadn't really interacted so much with people. And then Bruce said that perhaps it is because people are sometimes kind of embarrassed to talk about their sleep anxiety and sleep and stuff like that. And like when I read that, I was like, that rings so true to me. And maybe that's why, maybe that is why there's this disconnect, meaning I know that there are literally millions and millions of people out there who have insomnia. Yet, so many people reach out to me and say like, it's felt so lonely. I'm happy to know there are other people going through what I'm going through. And I'm thinking maybe that's it. Maybe people are so like embarrassed to talk about it that's why everybody feels so lonely. And going back to you, Amy, here, and you know, getting emails from you, being able to talk about that, I think is so helpful because, again, other people realize I'm not alone. Other people are going through this. And I think that brings hope, and it makes people feel like, okay, I'm not completely like unique and weird, and like things aren't like so bizarre. There are other people, and that gives you hope because that means like if somebody else can get better, so can I. So kind of long introduction there, but let's keep reading. It has come at a really good time for me as I'm just at the start of a 1 month period of unpaid leave from my work to try to sleep, retrain myself. I've known for a long time that CBDI is really the only way of tackling my difficulties, but it's only now I have bit the bullet, and that's awesome. Awesome, maybe. A brief overview of my story. I developed difficulty sleeping 5 years ago. This started along with a series of unfortunate health issues. I developed a number of vestibular issues and chronic migraine and had a minor head injury as well as a pre-existing diagnosis of CFS and hypothyroidism. My issue started when I became very visually dependent in order to balance. So whenever I closed my eyes, I became extremely dizzy, which combined with being extremely physically inactive began to develop into insomnia. Initially, a couple of doses of Zopiclone a week was enough to allow me to get back into a reasonable sleep pattern. But as the years have passed, obviously I've needed to use the drug more and more frequently in order to get any sleep, to the point where I'm now being unable to sleep at all or until 4 a.m. ish without taking Zopiclone. I'm so ready to begin sleep retraining. I'm so sick of feeling like a zombie. At this point, I actually feel better having no sleep without Zopiclone than having had some horribly broken sleep with Zopiclone, which leaves me sleepy and irritable all day. My sleep issue is problematic because when I don't have any sleep, my migraines are triggered and I become very dizzy, which makes working as a CBT therapist, unbelievably, I didn't see that when I first said that. Oh my gosh, Amy! All right, almost impossible as I'm too dizzy, sleepy, and cognitively slow to have meaningful conversations. Wow. What I do find difficult is not to rest/nap in the day because of my CFS and migraines. I'm very fatigued. However, my plan is to get lots of sunlight every day, try and rest, not nap in the afternoon, which will be challenging as I feel incredibly drunk and sleepy then, try and do some gentle exercise every day and to get up at 7 a.m. regardless of what happens, but not go to bed until I'm sleepy, feeling like I can fall asleep, which I'm guessing will be around 2 to 3 a.m. currently. There's no need to respond if you're busy, but it's helpful for me to listen to your podcast and to recognize that despite me telling myself that my insomnia is different, more complex, intractable than other people's, it's likely it isn't! Exclamation mark. A couple of things to talk about here, really. First, let's start with this last thing first. Yeah, that's, you know, realizing that your insomnia is maybe not so different from what many other people are going through is a breakthrough. Like, that's big. And because then again, you realize kind of what I just said, like, there are many people like me, and if other people have gotten past insomnia with CBTI, so can I, most definitely. And there's another email actually from Amy, but let's go over this one first. What you write about here, Amy, like 5 years ago, had some health issues, and that kind of evolved to insomnia. Sadly, common scenario. And by the way, I don't think I have time to talk about that right now, but you, Amy, may know about the 3P model, if anybody else out there. I've made videos about that, and you can Google it as well, but that kind of explains how insomnia develops. And very briefly, it's like something happens, triggers sleepless nights. Sleepless night in itself is normal when you have a trigger, but like you react to it by trying to sleep better, trying to force sleep, changing your behaviors, and then kind of it becomes chronic, which is, oh, by the way, I think is very, like, this is not only CBTI, it applies to CBT in general, so I'm sure you're very familiar with that, Amy. And then a couple other things like the Zolpi clone, very common story too, like somebody takes a sleep aid like here and there, and then you kind of develop tolerance, it doesn't work anymore, you kind of go up in the dosage, and then before you know it, you have to take it every night, and then it kind of doesn't really work that well, and it gives you side effects, and then you want to stop taking it, and then that becomes really hard because now you're kind of used to it. But a couple of things on that one. One is, when I started, if you'd asked me like 8 months ago about like rebound insomnia, which is like when you have insomnia, when you stop taking medication, I would have said, yeah, it's kind of a chemical thing, like your brain gets used to this kind of level of sedation, and when you lift it off, like it goes into hyperdrive, and I believe there's some truth to that for sure. But I think actually somebody mentioned, I think that was Julie, that she had read this book called Say Goodnight to Insomnia by Greg Jacobs, and he writes in that book that he believes that any effect of any sleep medication after 6 weeks is like placebo, which I don't know if that's completely correct or not, but I kind of tend to believe that too, and which goes to this, which is, I now believe that rebound insomnia is much more about preoccupation than actually like the chemical thing. Meaning, I believe that when somebody decides like, you know what, I'm not going to take my medication now, then what happens is you start wondering what's going to happen. You start thinking like, okay, I'm not taking it, so how long will I be awake? Will I sleep at all? What if I end up being up the entire night? How am I going to feel then? And what if I stay up two nights? Like, will I ever be able to get off it? Maybe I should take half of it, or maybe I should just take it. Or, you know, and that whole thought pattern, more than anything else, I now believe is what causes people to have worsening insomnia when they try to go off medications. And I hope that kind of insight, sharing that one was helpful to you, Amy. And what else? This one. What I do find difficult is not to rest/nap in the day because of, you know, how tired you are. And you know, completely understand that one. One thing that what I hear more and more often is like, or maybe I just identify it more and more often, but people telling me like, I have a hard time sleeping, hard to sleep at all, and then I feel really tired in the day, and I rest, but I don't nap. And then I'm like, tell me more about that. And then people are like, well, you know, I lay down and I rest. And then I'm like, well, do you close your eyes? And then they go like, yeah, I do. And then when people say that, like, I lay down to rest during the day and I close my eyes, to me that's like, I think you might be sleeping a little bit. You may not perceive it at all, but you may have microsleep. You may even have a little nap in there, which can really actually hurt your sleep at night, particularly if it's like more than once. Commenting on that, resting, of course, somebody has to rest when they're tired. But if you're closing your eyes, then I'm like, that's a sign that you may be sleeping. And it's you know, if you sleep during the day, it's going to be harder to sleep at night. So keep that one in mind. Maybe just try to keep your eyes open. I think that's a good one. Sunlight is great. Not resting, not napping, and that's a challenge. And by the way, I've been thinking about that. Not lately, but there was a time where I was thinking a lot about it. Like, how can I help somebody like just stay awake? It seems kind of like, you know, the obvious thing is like getting up, and what else can I do? And I haven't found like a really good one, but light is good. But I think more importantly, like just knowing that when during a time where you're trying to get past your insomnia and it's really important to stay awake during the day, anything is allowed is kind of what my philosophy on that one. You know, get up, take a walk, get outside is great, but even things like snack, you know, drink something, you know, basically like what, take a shower, you know, anything that helps you stay awake and that then helps you sleep better, I feel is quote unquote allowed. So hope that was helpful. And and then your strategy was here, like, I'm gonna get up 7 a.m. regardless, and then don't go to bed until I feel sleepy. I think that's good. And is that gonna be 2 or 3 a.m.? Maybe it will, but yeah, as you know, with CBT, like, keep moving forward, and that may become 1 a.m., you know, and then it might become midnight, and then you're sleeping like 7 hours and whatnot. So yep, sounds good. And actually, Amy said that she had some questions that she was going to save for later. But I was like, no, you know what? Just tell me what your questions are, and I'll try to answer them. So here we go. This is an email also from two days ago. So there's a question about daytime sleepiness. Typically, I nap daily between 2 to 4 p.m. Probably sleeping for around 90 minutes in order to manage my CFS. And by the way, what is CFS? I should have looked that up. Oh, it's chronic fatigue syndrome, of course. Okay, chronic fatigue syndrome / chronic migraine. I'm incredibly sleepy at this time and often also in the late morning. For example, unable to keep my eyes open, eyes watering, slurring, nodding off, as opposed to tiredness, fatigue. So sometimes nap also earlier. Typically, as the day goes on, while I remain fatigued, the sleepiness lessens. As far as I know, I don't have sleep apnea, so I'm guessing I have shifted my body clock a bit. Do we think the bed restriction might help to move it back to a more typical pattern? Well, the short answer is yes, definitely. The kind of expansion on this is like this. I hadn't read this in detail, but that just goes back to what I just talked about, that the whole resting napping thing can be a huge issue. And when I read this, like, I nap daily, maybe 90 minutes, maybe more, I'm like, that's a big culprit. And yes, I think if you stick to what you talked about, like get up at 7 a.m., avoid naps during the day, go to bed when you feel sleepy, if that's like 1 a.m. or noon, midnight or 2 a.m. or something like that, I think that is, yes, that would reset your body clock. Yeah. Okay, I'm now trying not to nap at daytime, which, while I'm finding incredibly difficult, I'm totally prepared to do this in order to improve my relationship with my sleep. I'd rather be working towards good quality chunk of sleep at night if possible. Also, should I include my previous nap time in the hours I was getting? So, for example, I'm setting my wake-up time for 7. I was previously getting 3 hours at night, so I'm adding on an hour for my nap. So I'm trying to go to bed not before midnight at earliest. Last night, I went to bed at midnight, took about 30 minutes to get to sleep, slept until 3:45, then was awake for 45 minutes, and then slept again until 6:15. I'm actually really happy with this. Easily pleased, maybe, but wondering if the waking in the night means I should go to bed later. The positive things was I felt like I had a couple of solid chunks of sleep rather than sleeping for 50 minutes and waking up again, which was my insomnia pattern. Once asleep, I didn't feel anxious when I woke up, just listened to my audiobooks for a bit. Hey, listen, that is super, super encouraging. You know, went to bed at midnight, took about 30 minutes, and then was awake for 45 minutes. That's a great start. And now to answer your question, should I go to bed later? I want to say this. That the best, in my opinion, the best strategy is set it and forget it. You make a decision pretty early on, And then you go at least, let's say, a week or 2 weeks before you kind of question that or change that. And because like once we get into that pattern of like, this happened, let me do this, let me change that, then we get into this like chasing your tail thing, and like you're like, maybe I should change this. Oh no, that didn't work. That made it worse. Well, then I should change it this way. No, that made it worse. Now, and then you're like all over the place. So, and not to be saying that you're in that direction, Amy, but just kind of my message here is just like the best thing to do is like decide upon something and then kind of go with it and not question it. So that said, I totally see where you're going before. Like you were saying, like maybe I was sleeping 4 hours on average, and maybe I should have a sleep window like set like maybe somewhere around there as a maximum allowed time to sleep. But I think for, to be honest with you, like for almost everyone, when you figure out like how much time should I spend in bed, somewhere between 6 to 6.5 to 7 hours, almost for everyone is right. I mean, sometimes 7.5, but so I think a good strategy is like, for example, though in the night you just talked about, you get up at 6:15. Typically, I feel that it's easier to get a working schedule when you get up a little bit earlier. So one strategy could be like, okay, I'm gonna get up at 6:30 and I'm not gonna go to bed before midnight. But if I don't feel sleepy at midnight, I'm gonna wait. That gives you a sleep window of 6.5 hours, and then pretty much just stick with something like that, and don't question it. And if you get into like, 10 days or a week or 2 weeks or something like that, and you're like, I'm actually falling asleep pretty quickly, and I'm sleeping through, and I feel that I need more sleep, then you're in a really good spot. Then you can be like, okay, now I'm gonna either go to bed a little earlier or go to bed later. But yeah, my thoughts on that. So pretty great. Really encouraged, Amy, by what I read now, and hope this was helpful. And now finally, let's see here. Oh, how do I get rid of this thing here? Oh, there. Finally, a comment from just 11 hours ago, and this is a comment to Insomnia Insight number 226, which I believe is the most recent one. I think I have 227 up, but anyways, this is from Joe, or I think so. Joe is from Indonesia. No, sorry, Malaysia, Malaysia, and I think his name is Jao, I guess, but goes by Joe as well. So anyway, let's read this. Hi Daniel, love your channel. I'm currently in the midst of recovering from my insomnia, mostly following the advice found in Sasha Stevens' books. However, just when I thought I got the upper hand on my sleep problem, a new problem arrived to complicate things further. That is, noisy neighbors who just moved in next door. The occasional noise they make at night is enough to wake me up and make me feel quite anxious, which of course exacerbates my sleep problems. I've tried to communicate with them several times, but so far to no avail. I was wondering if you have any advice for me. Thanks. Much love from Joe from Malaysia. First of all, Joe, thanks so much for this comment, and I said this before, is like every single comment or email I get, I'm super grateful for them. And it's fun to see the emails from places like Malaysia, which is like I have this ambition of like reaching every single person in the world with insomnia. It's like nice to see that people are finding these videos in places like Malaysia. Anyway, so going back to your question and your situation here, it sounded like when I read this first time, it sounded like there was a lot of noise, but now, like when I read it again, I was like the occasional noise they make at night. So maybe it's not necessarily like super loud, super disruptive noise, which then goes to my thoughts here, which were the following: that firstly, super happy you found Sasha Stevens' books. I think they're wonderful, and I recommend it to everyone. They're really, really good. And now you've used the techniques you learned there to get better, which is a huge. And again, I think Sasha Stevens would agree with me here that always focus on the positive. You have made headway, and there's no reason you're not going to get more benefit, and there's no reason to believe you're not going to get to a point where you don't worry at all about sleep and you sleep great. Now this this noise from the neighbor started happening. And the question becomes like, how, to what extent are they now affecting you? Well, it's clear they're affecting you, right? Because you're noticing that, you know, these are waking up and it's hard for you to go back to sleep. But here's the thing. We all wake up. Actually, when you do like an in-lab sleep study, you know, when somebody sleeps in the hospital and you check their brain waves and stuff, you see that people wake up actually multiple times per hour. And what happens is if somebody's like not having any problems with sleep, then they don't even remember that. They're like, they just wake up and roll over and then go back to sleep. Somebody that has kind of like a little bit hyperarousal, maybe a little bit anxious, and they also fall back asleep quickly, but they remember. They can go like, yeah, I woke up five times yesterday. And then I'm like, this is kind of like a conversation, example of a conversation from clinic. Like, and then what happened? Well, I fell back asleep quickly again, but I remember all those five times. That person is likely to be a little bit like, you know, have a little bit of anxiety. And then you have people with more frank insomnia that are like, they wake up and then mind is racing and they can't go back to sleep. And that is the problem. The waking up part is not the problem. Everybody wakes up. The problem is not being able to going back to sleep again. So where I'm going with this is to say that the noise is an issue, but maybe not the biggest one. The biggest one is kind of that it's triggering. So here's the thing, like two things. Number one, as Sasha Stevens says, and I totally agree with this, is like, as much as possible, try not to kind of like focus on it too much. Like, what I want to say is that sometimes there are things we cannot change. Like, you cannot change what neighbors you have, and you cannot change that they make noise. So in regards to that, I think it's best to have kind of an acceptance standpoint that, okay, and by the way, acceptance and resignation are two different things. Resignation is like, oh man, I give up. It's hopeless. I can't do anything. And acceptance is just like, it's raining outside or it's 87 degrees outside. And in this case, well, I have neighbors that are noisy and I can't do anything about that. So what can you do? Well, I think Sasha Stevens, I'm talking so much about her now, but I don't know why that happened, but she always talks about like, just move forward, look at the goal and just move forward. And by the way, I've said this so many times, but a super, super good analogy she has, and I'm sure you remember this one, is like, your goal is to get to a certain point and you're kind of walking there. And if you stumble on a rock and you start like looking at the rock and examining it and looking at it and like, how can I avoid this? What can I do? You're never going to get there. So just keep going is one thing. And then another thing, which is in the same vein, is like, the more you think about the noise being a problem and think about like, oh man, if I could just get rid of that noise, I would sleep great. If they didn't move around so much, I would have no problems. Then this kind of the noise issue goes from being something that maybe was manageable to something really, really big. And like everything hinges upon this noise. Like if it just wasn't as noisy, then everything would be great. And when you've gotten to that point, it's almost impossible. Because like so much like noise is like has become such a big issue, if you will, that that it's gotten so much power, then that in itself becomes the reason that every little noise creates a lot of insomnia. I hope that I made that thought pattern clear. I hope I conveyed something meaningful, Joe. And then finally, you could always try earplugs. I'm sure you thought about that too. But something to consider as well, of course. So thanks so much to everyone for questions and messages. And I encourage everyone to like comment on this episode or send me more messages. And for now, what I'm doing is, as you know, like I'm answering here and there, and on Thursdays, I'm kind of like squeezing in multiple answers, and I think this is going to be sustainable for a long time. Maybe I'm just thinking like, what if I get to a point where I it's hard to answer everyone. And I've toyed around with this idea of doing like a kind of Facebook live sessions and then posting them, and then I could answer like more things. But anyway, just sharing thoughts. Anyway, super, super thankful for everything. And I shall be back with more, if not tonight, then tomorrow. Okay, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.